if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
It really is exciting. First of all, we were doing something that's never been done before. You know, the brain drone race is something cool to do to engage the public, but the implications are way broader.
In April of 2016, the University of Florida conducted a unique drone race. This was the first ever drone race in which participants were controlling their drones with their brain waves. Dr. Juan Gilbert is an Andrew Banks Preeminent Endowed Professor at the University of Florida. He's also the chair of their Computer and Information Science and Engineering Department and the organizer of the world's first brain drone race. His students conducted the race by using brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs. Dr. Gilbert, how did the brain-computer interface first come to your attention?
Well, it came to my attention through my students. A group of them had found this technology and expressed an interest in it. And they asked if we could do a summer project. So 2 years ago, I let them work on it over the summer. And then from there, it grew. And the industry has grown. And we ended up doing this competition. So we're doing even more with it. So that's how it started. It was just a group of students who said, hey, I would like to do this.
Was that first summer project the genesis of your drone race?
Yes, definitely.
Tell me the story, please, of getting that drone race organized for April of this year.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot to it. So the drone race requires not only purchasing the equipment, meaning the brain-computer interfaces, the drones themselves, but it also involves putting together a team to organize and plan for the event, as well as to set up the competition. We had qualifying rounds, and then we narrowed it down to a handful of people who competed for the grand prize. So it was very involved. All these pieces, it may not sound like much, but it's a lot of work. In particular, given there are FAA regulations, that you can't fly them outside. So we had to find places where we could test and do the qualifying exams and things like that. So that's what we've been doing.
You make it look really easy, but what were some of the obstacles besides the FAA regulations that you had to overcome before you could have that drone race?
Well, putting the two together. So we had the BCI devices. We knew how to use. We've been using that. Then you have the drones, which are typically flown with a handheld controller, like a joystick or something. And the idea was, how do we get the drone's communication to talk to our actual BCI computer? And so that was a challenge, but again, we were able to figure that out and get our computer to talk to the drone. And so that's probably the biggest hurdle. And then figuring out what the competition was actually going to look like, and as far as we just going to have them race forward and getting people to participate. So that was the biggest hurdle.
How does this work exactly? Suppose the listeners and I are sitting down right now, and you're going to talk us through flying a drone with our brains. How do we do this?
So what we do is we put the brain-computer interface on your head first, and then we pull a piece of software that shows, imagine a three-dimensional cube floating on the screen in front of you. And then we tell you, think about pushing forward. And you could think about pushing a table, pushing a lawnmower. Just think forward. And you concentrate on forward, and the device would learn your pattern for forward, and then the cue moves into the screen. And then we tell you to think, pull it back, and then you learn that pattern and pull it back. So then we have the way that you think about forward, and then whenever you think forward, we can take that pattern and amplify it and apply it to the cube, and then, in this case, the draw.
How long does it take us to analyze the patterns so that we know the brain patterns and now we can fly the drone?
It doesn't take very long. I say maybe 5 minutes at most.
Wow. Were there any factors? I'm assuming that our brain waves are like fingerprints. Is that correct, that no two are going to be the same?
Yeah. Well, we're doing research on that as well. But yes, that's a good hypothesis.
If, for example, somebody is an introvert or an extrovert, would you see a difference in how easy it might be to fly a drone with their brain?
I don't think so. We haven't done analysis at that level to say by a categorization of introvert versus extrovert. It's about your ability to concentrate and focus. It has more to do with that than your individual personality trait.
So if, for example, somebody's very tired or they've just had something wonderful happen in their life, you might see a difference in performance.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Would you take me back in your imagination to that drone race at the university on April 16th of this year? What was that day like for you?
Oh, it was exciting. A lot of anxiety to get the race going, make sure everything works, dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. So, I mean, it's stressful at first to make sure everything is working. But then as things are falling into place and once the competition gets underway, it's pure adrenaline to see the race. So people are really concentrating and trying to push the drones with their thoughts. And it's just fun to watch. So it was very entertaining and quite enjoyable.
What goes through your mind the first time you see one of those lift off?
I mean, it's exciting. It's like, okay, here we go.
That had to have been the most incredible time.
It really is. I mean, I can't say it enough. It really is exciting because, you know, first of all, we were doing something that's never been done before. And then we're watching people really focus and race in a way that they've never done. So it really is a lot of excitement and adrenaline.
Did I read somewhere that you're working on making this an annual event now?
Yes, we are. We are looking to do it every year. So I have a team in the lab right now working on the next iteration.
What are some of the things that you think they might do to raise the bar for the next drone races?
Well, we're talking about maybe a turn or something like that, race up forward and then come back. So there's discussions about adding more maneuvers over time.
Seriously cool stuff. What if somebody listening wants to get, let's say we have a college professor listening who's on the West Coast right now, how would she get her class involved in something like this?
Well, that's one of the things we're doing. We're trying to document what it takes to do this brain drone race. So I would say just be patient. Let us get through this cycle. I like to try and do it twice before we release all the information on how to replicate it. But we definitely would like to see people replicate the brain drone race.
So definitely kind of stand by and then get maybe an update from you in 2017 is what I've just heard.
That's right.
What are some of the implications for this drone race? If we can move drones with our mind, what does that mean we may be able to do, let's say, in 5 more years with mind control devices? Let's look at 3 different areas. Let's start with in our homes.
Well, the implications are big. So the reason we did this, the brain drone race is cool. Everybody gets that part. But there's a bigger goal here. Our bigger goal is to popularize these devices. So you say, well, why would we do that? So imagine if people wore these things like wristwatches, and they were using them to interact with things around them. Okay? Is that brain exercise? Does that improve your cognitive ability or concentration? No one knows because no one's used them at that extent. If we had people wearing these on a regular basis, could the data that we collect tell us something about early onset of brain disease? Will we make discoveries in that area? And there's many more questions. So it's a cool, you know, the brain drone race is something cool to do to engage the public, but the implications are way broader. Can people live at home longer if they can use their thoughts to engage the things around them in that home? So there's a lot of implications.
If you could do anything at all using this technology, what would be the next thing you'd do? After the drone races are a huge success, what are you going to turn to for in-our-home type of mind control devices?
Well, we have a project. Everyone goes to the obvious one, which is a wheelchair, right? Can I use my thoughts with a wheelchair? But we're looking broader than wheelchairs. We're looking at devices in the home. We're looking at, the other obvious one was prosthetics. Can people use these in some kind of prosthetic, you know, your hands or fingers? We're not at that level. That's a much more detailed level. But we're looking at controlling devices and communicating with other devices. So we have some things in the works I can't tell you about just yet, but stay tuned. There'll be a lot more coming out of the lab.
Can't wait to see these. Let's also look at what might happen for the future at work if you're using mind control devices.
Oh, yeah. Who knows what we could do there? So the idea is that you could use this to control things in the office place. Now, one thing we can't do, we can't type and try and take your thoughts and just map them out on paper. That's not what we're capable of doing at this time.
And what about for fun? What about anything, just a really cool toy in addition to the drones that you'd love to see in the future and perhaps develop?
Yeah, I think we're actually doing that now. Like, the drone is a cool thing. We're going to try it with a remote control car. So we're actually doing some of those things. I think it could be fun as a toy as well.
When will we see a remote control car that we operate with our brains?
That's a tricky one. I doubt we'll have that simply because the ability to change real quickly or respond quickly would be very challenging. However, I think we're more likely to have autonomous cars before we have the brain-controlled car.
This is an exciting field. What's been one of your absolute favorite stories that years from now you'll tell your grandchildren about developing brain-computer interface devices?
Well, the first brain drone race. I think in the future, if we are capable of fine-tuning these devices, well, we could race them through, say, a football stadium or something with multiple turns. That would be great.
Wow. I would love to see this. You have received, I know, a number of awards for STEM innovation. Suppose somebody listening would love to know more about getting involved in science, technology, engineering, and math. And let's say this person is coming from a background of not having a whole lot of money and maybe an underrepresented group. What are some of your absolute favorite resources that, as a mentor, you might give someone today that they could use to learn more?
That's tricky. It really is a personal thing for me. In general, I would say you go out on the internet and look for inventors, researchers, professors that look like you, and then once you find them, you can learn about them. So I've had students approach me about doing Black History Month reports and things, and they find you. And I think that's the most important thing is to be able to go out there and know that there are people like you who are doing this kind of work, and you can find them now with the internet. So I don't think there's a single resource that I could refer to that would be the go-to thing, but I think it would be a personal thing for you to find people that you can relate to.
We talked about trends in brain-controlled devices.
We're doing some work in the home. Again, I can't give you all the details, but there's stuff we're doing in the home with the DCI device that I think is going to be very impactful in the future.
Of course, I'm imagining things like maybe your misplaced keys kind of jingling and moving across the floor to you, or perhaps things like where is my code and it twitching and things of that nature with the Internet of Things.
Well, yeah, you're right in the ballpark. The Internet of Things will play a role in a lot of the stuff we're doing.
I won't question further on that, but I will love to know when you can actually talk about it. Let's give some locations where people can find information online about what you're doing, about your program, and about your brain drone race. What are some of the links where people can check this out?
You can go to braindroneRace.com, and you'll find information about that there. You can go to, JuanGilbert.com. You can go to hxrlab.org, I think, or .com probably too. And you could see the team. You could learn about other research we do. And I would say start there.
As we wrap up here, Dr. Gilbert, and thank you for your time, if you could only have your students or anybody observing your work get one thing from you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference, what would you really like that to be?
Oh, that's easy. Perseverance. Because everyone, and this is a lesson I even taught this too, but it's often the case that people think there's this overnight success, that somehow someone just overnight did this and now look at them. And I have yet to find that. Whenever I find someone who I thought was an overnight success, they say, oh yeah, it seemed like it, but I've been working on it for 10, 15 years or whatever. And so there's always a backstory. And when it comes to the stuff that we do and research on the cutting edge, it really is perseverance, because you have failures along the way, but you don't let the failure stop you. You keep going. So just because something doesn't work now doesn't mean you won't figure out a way to make it work later.
In your own career as a scientist, who taught you the best lesson about perseverance?
Probably my mother, actually. It wasn't necessary that she's a scientist or anything. It was just a lesson of life. You don't quit.
Dr. Gilbert, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You and I have been listening to Dr. Juan Gilbert, Andrew Banks Preeminent Endowed Professor and Chair of the University of Florida's Computer and Information Science and Engineering Department. Check out the video on the world's first brain drone race on braindroneRace.com. That's braindroneRace.com. This is pretty amazing to see. Meanwhile, if you'd like an update on the University of Florida's research on brain-controlled devices, you'll find that on their website, hxrlab.org. That's hxrlab.org. And you can also get an update on Dr. Gilbert's most recent research projects on his website, juangilbert.com. Once again, that is juangilbert.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.